So I was showing y'all some of my Bolero.
Bolero. Those are the Bugs Bunny ones.
No. The Danvers are the Bugs Bunny ones. Okay. I didn't grow any of the Danvers in the fall, but I'm going to grow some in the spring. The Bolero was the hybrid orange one I really like. And then this one here is called Yellowstone. And now these are pretty to me. And one of the things I love the most smells is fresh dug carrots. It's got good smell to them. You want to try one?
Yeah. Yeah, I like these too. I like the color on them.
So these is yeller.
Mm-hmm. They are yellow.
Hence the name Yellowstone. And you know that the old cultivars of carrots were actually all these crazy colors. And they actually bred carrots to be orange. So these are, now I think they had to kind of rebreed them back into the colors, but naturally they were different colors.
Is this a hybrid?
No.
It's not, it's an OP.
Yeah, but I don't know anybody that saves carrot seeds.
No, but yeah. I just thought I'd ask.
This is a good one. These, of the three I grow, these seem to get the biggest. I really like them.
Yep.
Nice, good, sweet little flavor. Let's say hey to everybody. Hello, everybody, and welcome to the Row by Row Garden Show. We're super excited that you're joining us this week. I'm Travis.
And I'm Greg.
And we got a good show planned tonight. We're going to talk about summer squash and cucumbers later on in the show. Right now, we're just doing a little snacking. And
look what I got there.
Uh-oh.
Asparagus is coming in.
Asparagus coming in. I saw you put some of that on your salad yesterday.
I did.
You had some. Try that like you done growed some carrots.
I said out of the garden. I didn't say whose garden.
So these are our overwinter carrots that we're planting fall. And I've been meaning to do it last couple weeks, but I've been tied up. I got to plant me another round, so I'll have some later in the summer. Let's talk about what else we got going on. I saw something the other morning that I ain't never saw before, and Danny from Deep South Homestead had said he ain't never seen it before. So he planted his taters about 2 or 3 weeks earlier than we did, early February, if not late January. And we had that cold spell come through. We didn't get it that bad here, but I think they got it pretty bad over there. It kind of weakened as it got, the front did as it got to us.
Right.
So they had some freezing rain and stuff, and it bit his taters good. They looked like they were up about this tall and just bit them hard. Now, in the past, I have had taters get a little frost damage and they come back, but these look pretty tore up. And he said he was talking to some of the old timers around there, and they told him they'd take a hoe and cut them off even with the soil and they'll grow back. And I'd be dog if it didn't happen, because he had the video. He filmed one part of it when he did it. He had Wanda out here with a hoe chopping them off. And then he showed 4 weeks later, and they was a growing back.
Well, and you went on me too. I would have left them alone and healed them and let them come back. That's what I would, in my infinite wisdom, would have done.
Yeah, I'd probably have replanted them if I had more seed taters. But yep. Yeah, they're coming right back up just like the first time you
planted. Taters are pretty resilient.
That was interesting to me.
So things are getting hot around here. It's getting to be springtime. And the reason I know that is because I caught a hive of bees this morning. A buddy of mine called me, and I went out there and caught a hive of bees. I already got one hive, but I caught me an extra hive out there this morning. And they was up in a tree, got them in a box, and caught them and brought them back home. So that way we know springtime's getting here when you start seeing those honeybees are swarming.
You got any... Are we going to have a pollinator guest on the show?
We're going to have us a little something special next week, and we're going to talk about pollinators next week, because that's very important to growing your own food and growing a garden.
Another thing that has to do with pollinators, we got about 20 more varieties of flowers, things that attract pollinators to your garden that we're working on, and it won't be long before we have them on the site. Got a bunch of varieties of the ProCut sunflowers, about every color they make. Bunch of different individual colors of zinnias. We got some
caused us lots of exciting things coming for the cut flowers, which everybody needs to be planting in the garden.
Yep, we got some exciting things coming on in the next few weeks.
You planted squash and cucumbers and tomatoes.
Pole beans, rattlesnake pole beans. I planted bush beans within the last week, and I'm going to do some more serious planting before the week is out.
You a little bit ahead of me. I'm going to plant squash and cucumbers towards the end of this week, and then maters probably early next week. I'm going to show y'all here, like I've said many times before, don't get fooled by them big old mater plants.
That's perfect right there.
That's perfect right there. That's growed out. That pulls right out of that cell. That's all you need to grow right there.
Put you some good compost underneath it. Plant it deep. Step back and hide behind a tree because it needs to take off.
Plant it deep. And what I'll do now before I go to run my first line of trellising on them is I'll prune them on up because I like that first run of string to touch that stem there to kind of really hold it in place. But that's all you need right there.
And that's the Brickyard. We grew that. That's the Brickyard variety.
You don't need no big old pot of tomato nope. plant. Everybody's going to do a lot better for you. What else we got transplanted?
Well, I was going to show everybody my watermelon plants. So as everybody probably knows, I'm crazy about me some watermelons. And I'm growing moon and stars this year. And I got two flats of them growing. Now, these here are starting to put on their true leaves right there. You can barely see them coming out. So I'll pop these things with some 20-20-20 in probably about 10 days, they're going to be ready to transplant.
So a little pro tip there, if you live where it's cold, and we've seen some folks on the road by road group still got snow.
Oh yeah, I feel
if
for
you live in a cold climate with a short growing season, and you think watermelons are out of the question for you, start them from transplants. And you can get some watermelons in. Now, I know if you got snow on the ground right now, the last thing you probably think about is watermelons, but start you some transplants soon, and that'll shorten up that maturity date by at least 2 weeks.
Yep. And I'm growing the red moon and stars, but we also got a yellow moon and stars, which is very unusual. We was lucky enough to acquire some of those. So if you're interested in growing some yellow watermelons, I'd like somebody to try those. I may grow them next year. And I think those are going to be winners right there.
We got a YouTuber friend of ours that's in Texas. His name's Alan, and his channel's Texas Prepper 2, all one word. And he's supposedly going to be growing some of the yellow moon and stars from us this year. And I'll be interested to see how those
yep.
turn out. And these peppers right here. I think we showed these last year. They come along good. And we got, they might be one or two gaps in there, but pretty much 100% germination on our peppers, which is good stuff.
And if you look real close, they starting to put their true leaves out too. They just starting down in there, so they're going to pop pretty quick.
We're going to hit these pretty soon and then hit them a couple times. And in probably about a week or so, we'll go ahead and pop these up to 3-4 inch pots.
Once they get a little bit further than this and you start seeing those other leaves coming out, they take off in a hurry. It ain't long after that.
In the greenhouse.
To get them to this stage, it tries your patience a little bit, but once you get them to this, you pretty much got it licked.
Yeah, and you can pretty much take them off the mat once they get to this point. No really need in doing that. We got some nice true leaves coming on there. Lots of different varieties. So, and we got okra started too.
Okra's coming up.
We like to start our okra. From transplants in the spring because we can get that jump start on. So the okras is coming along too.
So I got me a row of squash planted, summer squash last week. And I probably should have had them planted a week or two before that because you can get by with planting squash. Of your summer varieties, summer squash is one of the first things you can plant.
Yeah. Field corn can take a little bit of frost.
Field corn can too. Yep.
I'm geared up and ready to go now. I finally got my pile burn off last week.
Mm-hmm.
Now it took me a couple tries, but I got it to burn good that day. But this was more than your average 2-beer fire. This was a pretty big old fire.
I told you, everybody that I ever seen makes my burn pile, tries to burn too quick. You got to have a little patience and let it dry out before you burn it, and it'll burn a lot better.
I had to restack a few times when it burned, but it burnt down to nothing, which is good.
Well, let's talk about summer squash.
Let's talk about summer squash. So before we get into varieties, let's talk about a few kind of important growing practices, and I'm going to dig into this a little bit more on my squash planting video, but if there's one thing that drip irrigation is really important on, squash is one of those crops. Keeping that leaf moisture off of them, cucurbit, any kind of cucurbit, watermelon, squash, pumpkins, cucumbers, downy mildew and powdery mildew are going to feed on that leaf moisture.
Well, the thing about squash is it's what I can consider a low value crop because they grow off so quick and so easy. In about 35, 45 days, you can grow squash off if your temperature. But here's how you justify the drip tape. So when those squash are done in about 45 days and you've harvested them everything, you still got your drip tape there, you can come right behind that and plant you some beans or something other and you still use the same drip tape and double crop it. And that's the way you justify the drip tape on that squash.
And squash are easy to remove, and you definitely want to remove them. I'll mention, talk about that in just a second. You can go grab that main stalk because it'll trail on that a little bit. Pull up the whole thing. Maybe take you a little scuffle hoe going there. You can pull up the tape, clean up that spot, put it right back down, or you can, if it's still relatively clean.
Yeah, if I bury the drip tape, I just pull my squash plants up, rough it up a little bit, and plant right back on top of it.
Even though it make quick, though, a lot of times it will make for, several weeks afterwards. It starts making.
Now, what I did last year, and I probably do it this year too, I got a little bit of head start last year. I planted me succession plantings of squash every 2 weeks. And that worked out really well because we had squash for a long period of time.
I can in my garden plant squash, on up till middle of August, September. That's when my squash bug population explodes.
Mm-hmm.
There ain't nothing I can do about it. I just know that. That's when squash time's over with. But I can succession plant up until then and get away with it. As far as controlling the pests, you know if you're going to have problems with bugs or worms on your squash. If you had them last year, you're going to have them this year. So be proactive. Keep you some BT on hand. If you need something with a little more punch, and go with some spinosad there. The spinosad kills on contact. The BT is on the plant. They eat the plant and that kills them.
Yeah. On those squash bugs, you need to use that spinosad. You need to use it early on. Everybody waits too late for they start on squash bugs. You need to start early on. You need to have good rotation. Never plant your squash back in the same place you had them last time. Also, you want to use cover crops. We preach cover crops over and over again, but that helps a lot too with your insect pressure. Removing that crop debris, cleaning it up, keeping everything nice and tidy.
Yeah, when those squash plants are done, get them out of there, put them in your burn pile. Don't put them in your compost pile. Put them somewhere that you can burn them or get rid of them away from the garden. Those squash bug eggs and those fungal spores will overwinter in your soil there and cause problems.
Yeah, now I normally don't have issues with powdery and downy mildew early on. My later crops, when it gets hotter, I seem to have more of an issue there then. And we have some products that you can use for downy and powdery mildew.
Copper.
If you have those days where it's humid, it's really wet, it's hot and it's humid, that's setting up ideal conditions for powdery and downy mildew.
Yeah, when that humidity just gets insufferable down here, you feel like you can't breathe, that's when it really starts to blow up on them plants.
Varieties.
Varieties. And we've got some varieties here. And you can tell us which ones you plant, and I'll tell you which ones I'm going to plant.
I did not plant this green tent. To be honest with you, I have never planted it. It's on my list to plant.
So these two are what we call patty pan squash. We got two varieties there. Your Benny's green tent is old. Heirloom OP's been around for a while. And then you got the Sunburst here, which is an AAS winner and one of my favorites.
I've grown that a couple of times.
And I'm definitely going to plant the Sunburst this year. I might plant some of that depending on, I ain't figured out how much room I got quite yet. But the patty pans, if you never tried the patty pans, they are really good. And a lot of people are like, well, how do I cook them? They don't look like a normal squash. You just slice them up like you would a pie in little chunks, throw them in a pan, and they're good to go.
Yep, and they're nice. They're unusual, and they make a nice presentation, especially if you want to cut them up and eat them raw.
They got a little bit kind of a nuttier flavor than your traditional squash. The texture is a little more firm. Really good.
Spineless beauty zucchini, which is your standard green zucchini right here. So if you like your zucchinis to be green, this is the one to plant.
That's a good productive one. And then this one right here, sure enough.
Golden Delight. Now I planted some of these the other day. I got where I tend to like the golden varieties of zucchini, which is different because we think zucchinis are supposed to be green, but they come in yellow too now. And this is a great one right here to plant. Golden Delight zucchini.
Yeah, I like to plant both of these. I like to plant the green and the yellow. And then mix them up, makes the dish all pretty and colorful.
Gold Prize, I also plant these. Now these are straight neck. These are your regular old gold neck, gold prize squash, which is your straight neck yellow squash. Mm-hmm. This is the ones that you see in the grocery store. A lot of people like to grow these.
That's a hybrid.
Yeah, I like to grow them too. And they'll produce like crazy.
Yeah, those are good. And in my opinion, they better if you get them small. Like that, I don't want to let them get too big.
Eight ball. I grew some of these a few years ago. These are nice to grow. Eight ball can make a really good stuffing squash if you like to do that.
Stuffing squash, and I like to just cut them in half, put them right on the grill grate, and they're good. Now these eight ball folks, these have been selling like hotcakes. We are limited on these, so if you want some of those, get them now because we're subject to run out. By the end of the
process. If you've never grown any of these unusual squashes, definitely do it. I mean, they're easy to grow. One of the first things, if you're a beginner gardener, if you think about gardening, first thing you can grow is summer squash. Mm-hmm. They're the easiest things out there to grow, and they're quick.
I've been notoriously bad about always planting my squash too close together. Not in row, but between the rows.
Yep.
And then when they get sure enough big, it's like fighting a jungle getting in there. So I think I'm going to go to 5 foot. I've been doing 4 foot. I think I'm going to go to 5 foot.
Well, this year. Definitely. I mean, 3 foot is the nearest you ever want to think about it. It's going to be crowded in there like that. So I'm probably, I think I planted mine on 4 foot.
I think I'm going to go to 5 just to have me a little bit of a walk in there. Last year, I didn't even have nowhere to set my bucket down. It was just plants everywhere. So I think I'm going to go to there. So we talked about summer squash. We're not going to cover winter squash varieties today because winter squash, you usually want to wait a few more weeks to plant those. So that'll be a whole nother show. Now we want to talk about cucumbers.
Cucumbers, and I planted my cucumbers as well. The first one, we want to talk about is National Pickling Cucumber.
So that's your old heirloom OP. And that one was bred to make the size of it supposed to be perfect for fitting in a pickle jar.
Yep, and we've been selling a lot of those.
So the National Pickling, and then the other two OP ones we got the...
Calypso's not OP.
No. The Market More, which is your OP slicer, your standard good slicer everybody goes to. And then this one right here, which I have grown before, and it's really good. This lemon cucumber.
I have never grown those, but I did plant me a few this time.
They're round, and they're good to eat. You just pull one of those off the vine and chomp into it and get stuff. And then we've got our two mass producers here, and we've talked about these.
Let me hold them right here while you go ahead and lay into them.
So these two are what we call gynoecious, which means they produce all female flowers.
That's the reason I'm holding the pack, letting him talk, because I can't see it.
Gynoecious? Mm-mm. Can't say that. Mm-mm. So they make all female flowers, which is where the fruit comes from. So you're going to get a lot more production out of these two than you will the others. So the Calypso is the pickling variety. The Stonewall is the slicer. And
the Calypso is one I planted.
So I'm going to grow 31 row or two panels of those and two panels of those. That's what I did last fall, and it turned out really well for me. I'm talking about bucket loads of cucumbers about every other day.
I'm telling you, these two varieties there will absolutely blow your socks off at what they make. They don't make a lot of vine, but man, they will put the fruit
on.
You'll
be out there picking and just keep finding cucumbers.
Unless you want to put a world of them up, don't plant too many of them because you'll have way more than you and your neighbors can eat.
as far as trellising cucumbers, I do like to give them something to run up on. You can plant them and let them just roam in the garden, but we like to use the 16-foot long cow panels, the galvanized cow panels. And a little pro tip here, they'll climb up that panel, but they also gonna run out the garden a little bit. So put your cucumber row with your panel on the edge of your garden plot. Don't put it in the middle, else it's gonna try to run all over your other plants. So put your panel on the edge, the end of your garden, and then plant the cucumbers on the side of the panel pointing away from the rest of the garden. That way, you ain't gotta worry about crawling all over everything else.
Another reason a lot of people trellis them in the farmers, the commercial farmers got where they trellis about all their cucumbers and pickles. And the reason why is because the consumer does not like the yellow belly.
Right.
The yellow belly is the side that lays on the ground. If you grow a cucumber on the ground, you pick it up, it's gonna have a yellow belly on the bottom side of it there, which really didn't hurt anything. But the consumer has demanded that the grocery stores does not have it anymore. So all the commercial farmers pretty much have gotten to the point where they trellis these varieties to keep from having that yellow belly. It bothers me none. I don't mind the yellow belly. And I will plant these Calypsos and I won't trellis those.
Really?
I won't trellis mine.
Now, what I've noticed.
On the slicers, I would.
What I've noticed with the slicers, though, these things grow so prolifically that even the ones of mine that are on the ground, they're well shaded, so they don't ever really get the yellow belly. You get the yellow belly when you got a lot of sun coming in from the top, and then a shaded area on the bottom like you do on watermelons. Mm-hmm. So I haven't had as much problem with that on those. So get your cucumbers in, get your squash in. We like to plant our cucumbers and squash and the summer squash in the same plot. That makes our rotation real easy. We can remember, you know, that's what we had them this year. Move them around next year. Let's get to some questions. If you have any questions during the show, as always, put those in the comments, and we'll get to them on next week's show. If we answer your question on tonight's show, send us an email to cusserve@hosstools.com. We'll send you a nice little prize for playing the game. What we got?
Well, question number one comes from Welch Homestead, NC, and I'm assuming that's North Carolina.
That would make sense.
I would like to plant a test garden this year for tomatoes. How far apart do I need to keep the OP, open pollinated varieties, from the F1, which means hybrid? So how far do they need to keep their open pollinated from their hybrid varieties to keep them cross pollinating?
Well, couple clarifiers here. If you're not trying to save the seed and reproduce this variety from the plants you grow, it's not going to matter. All the fruits are going to be true pretty much to those varieties. Now, if you are trying to save the seed and you've got a variety you've been cultivating year over year, there is the possibility of some cross-pollination. Tomatoes are self-pollinating, but that doesn't mean that you can't have some natural cross-pollination from just a bee feeding on one flower and surreptitiously going to another flower, to another variety. This is not as prevalent in tomatoes as it would other crops, but they say it could be more prevalent depending on the variety. Some varieties have a longer, what they call style length. So the style is that long tube on the female part of the flower. If you think about it, the longer that style sticks out there, the bigger the chance is that you're going to get pollen from some other source there. But for the most part, I've always grown different varieties on the same row, and I've never had any problems with cross-pollination.
If it is a huge concern to you, I'd say somewhere around 20 feet.
Right. But I don't think you'll have any issues. There is that possibility out there you can get some natural cross-pollination, but I think the chances are pretty low. Okay. And then our next question comes from Tex Gal.
Texas, I'm assuming.
She's probably in Texas, or likes Texas. She says, okay, do you favor topping peppers or not topping? Now, we ain't talking about putting toppings on peppers like bacon and cream cheese.
Okay. She's talking about topping the plant.
Yeah.
Which is new to me. I've never heard that before.
I hadn't either.
I don't know why you'd want to do that.
I guess maybe to get more of a bushier plant habit.
But it would stress the plant. I just can't. I don't. That the you know the short answer to that is no. I don't think you would need to. At least somebody has got some infinite wisdom there that they need to share with me. I can't see where that would help anything whatsoever. So to answer your question, Tech Scout, no, do not top your pepper plants.
Yeah, the plant grows mostly at that apical meristem at the top. You take that off and you're going to throw it for
when I cross my arms like this, that means it's getting profound.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I'm laying profound wisdom out there.
Okay. Yeah. I can see it just glowing off of you now, but I didn't notice it first. Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, that's going to do it for tonight. I'm going to actually, let's bring that up one more time. Now, look, I want you, if you can see that on the camera, this is what them trays do so well for you. These roots ain't trying to wrap around here. If you look at all of them, well, they all growing straight down right there.
Mm-hmm.
And that's pretty to see.
It is.
That's going to be a good tomato plant right there. I'll put him back in the tray and I'll give him a nice home next week.
Mm-hmm.
And so, we're going to go get started on getting the rest of our warm weather crops planted.
Yep.
Making some videos, get some content out there for y'all. And don't waste much time. It's getting around that time.
Y'all get off the couch, as I've said before, and get out there and get something done. These pretty days, you do not need to be sitting inside. You need to be working. Time has changed. We got plenty of time in the afternoon. Let's get out there and get something done.
That's right. Hit that share, hit that subscribe button, and we will see you guys next week.
Take care.